FM podcast. This is Scott Kesterson, and tonight you're listening to Reflections from the Road. This war is real. Fighting is everything. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Tempt not the righteous man to draw his sword. Conviction, righteousness, ruthlessness. To understand tolerance, you have to understand the line of intolerance. War is the teacher, soldiers are the students. They become the bards of war. Good evening, patriots. And tonight is Thursday, April 4th, in the year 2024. I'm actually broadcasting from inside my Jeep somewhere along the road between in the middle of Wyoming, not quite in Cheyenne yet. So it's kind of an interesting experience. I've been saying I'm going to get to do this for a long time, and I finally have rigged up the system to do it. And I won't kid you, it's pretty neat. So here I am sitting with the freeways on my left. I'm off on the country road here and just broadcasting away. And this is where technology really shines. I've got a hot up with my hotspot with my cell phone. And I've got my new controller set up, and it's just working perfectly. So I can't complain, very happy, and we'll have a good show tonight. Patriots, before we get going, one thing to be very clear, we are dealing with psychopathic pedophile elites. They are crazy. They will do anything to maintain control. There's two major areas they're attacking right now. One is food. The other is finance. Food is something you need to be prepared with. And you need to be prepared for things that come in natural disasters, unexpected events, destabilizing situations within our economy and within our society. That means you need to have an emergency set of block of food. It's your baseline to everything you do. And that's why we have My Patriot Supply. My Patriot Supply is the number one supplier of emergency food in the country. So if you head on over to preparewithbards.com, preparewithbards.com. You'll take advantage of the great savings they have there. They have their three-month emergency food kits on sale right now. If you order by 3 p.m., same-day free shipping. They're a great package, 2,000 calories per person per day or per day for each packet meal. And it comes in four-layer bags with a shelf life of 25 years. You want to get one for every member of your family. This is really part of a foundational system. The great thing about that, it's the insurance policy that we all need. And I'll tell you what, it's one of these things that in 25 years, if we didn't need it, we can have a big party anyway. It's going to be the best thing ever. But it is important to have. They are pushing on every level to try to break people's will, and food is part of their weapon system. Now, so is money, and that means your retirement income. So that is where you need to get hold of Birch Gold. Right now, we are in a crisis where they're trying to force everybody into a compliance with their new digital CBDC dollar. They're trying to add more debt. They're trying to deflate the value of your retirement savings. And they're even talking about pilfering 401ks at the Wall Street level to get the money out to do what they want. That literally cannot be. So what we need to do is get hold of Birch Gold. And how you do that is you type in BARDS, B-A-R-D-S, and you send it to 989898. That's BARDS, B-A-R-D-S, to 989898. And they'll send you a free information packet. Get the information packet, download it, read it, become informed, and give them a call and set up an appointment. If you have an existing IRA or 401k, they'll convert it over to a precious metals-backed IRA at no cost to you. So take advantage of that. They can advise you on how to handle your retirement incomes and much more. So again, contact Birch Gold by typing in BARDS, B-A-R-D-S, and sending it to 989898. That's BARDS, B-A-R-D-S, to 989898. You will not be disappointed. It's the best thing you can do today. So pay My Patriot Supply, which is all these links are below, and that's preparewithbards.com, and texting BARDS, B-A-R-D-S, to 989898. Well, Patriots, it's been a really good day and just a chance for me to just drive across the nation and really, as I enjoy doing on these times, and to really spend time with God, spend time with good calls with people. I had a call today with Pastor Rod Parker. I had a good call with Michelle and Leah. We had just good calls overall today and touching base with folks, and especially as we get ready for this weekend. And that's going to be in first this Saturday the 6th at Flemingsburg, which will be kind of an afternoon event. And we're just going to get together. We're going to pray. We're going to walk and talk about the property there, whoever shows up. And I understand a number of people are making reservations. Do expect it to be cold, so I'm told, which is fine. And just be prepared for that. Now, Willie's going to be there. He's the owner of the property. I think Bill, our favorite Bill, is going to be there as well. And we're just going to have a get-together. We're just going to potluck it and bring your own food. So it's nothing special and in terms of food, but it is special always to get together and pray. All of these events, we will be able to do baptisms. It will get cold in Mandolin Farms. So if you're going to get baptized there, because I had somebody reach out and ask about it, I will gladly baptize you. We will gladly baptize you. But just be prepared. You're going to get the Holy Spirit shocked into you with the water temperature. That's coming. So that's part of the event, I guess. So I know that we've already got Nikki on the ground up there. And I think Laura Lee's coming in, and a number of other people are moving in pretty quickly to settle in for the weekend. Then on Sunday, and by the way, we'll do the regular show on Sunday morning, no problem. Sunday, I'll be up towards Dayton, and that's where we're having the event at Brookville, I believe. That's with Pastor Neil Peterson's church there. Great conversation I had with Pastor Peterson today. They're super excited. What's going on. We're going to have a Sunday night potluck starting at 5 p.m. We're going to get together. We're going to have our potluck dinner. We're going to do some welcome introductions. We're going to do prayer, worship, and some deliverance afterwards. So that'll be great to welcome in the next day, April 8th. And this is all the Ohio side. The Texas event, which is where Pastor Rod Parker is, he's just headed down today. He's actually on the road right now with all of his equipment. 50 volunteers down there to start putting together a revival on the border. They are going to start at the same time on Sunday, 5 p.m. Jim Conley is down there. He's going to be the barbecue guy for Texas. And we have a chef coming in on Monday to do the dinner there, who is part of the church, Pastor Neil Peterson's church. So it's going to be a fantastic event. Both events are going to start Sunday night at 5 p.m. in whatever time zone. We're Eastern. Pastor Rod Parker is Central. Same type of thing, getting together, welcome, prayer, deliverance. Repentance is going to be a big part of this theme this weekend, just so you know. I mean, we need to be repenting as a nation. This is a critical time that we need to start facing who we are, and we need to be repenting for a nation to pray that God gives us mercy. So let's hope he does. And then we have, with this, we're going to have Monday. We'll be starting at 10 a.m. And that will be an all-day event that will open with the same type of thing, some opening prayers and so forth. We'll be doing a whole cover of the significance of the eclipse event. We'll also be doing a lot of discussion about types of prayers to do during and the eclipse. We have some great speaker lineups. So we have Pastor Devonese, we have Pastor Neil Peterson, we have Apostle Greg, who's Pastor Devonese's mentor. We may have Pete Santilli. I don't know the status of that because I guess the FBI decided it was a good time to raid his home and take his electronics again. So, and I guess he was thrown in jail again. Who knows? Abigail and little Leah, who's been on the show, they're coming there. They'll be there. And of course, Michelle and Leah, Resistance Chicks, and myself. So it'll be a great event, and we'll be going all day. We have a dinner at about 4:30 there. I think Pastor Rod Parker's doing something similar. And we'll both be going all night. So this is going to be a real big event going on right now, and we're really looking forward to everybody being there. If you haven't registered, head on over to bardsfest.com, register for the event. We do ask for a small donation if you can afford it, but we don't want that to be a limiting factor, like always. If you can afford it or not, we want you there. So, but head on over to take a look at all that is going on. So, someone said, I donated to Texas thinking it was both. Is the money shared between Texas and Ohio? Someone just wrote this. So doesn't matter. It's going to work out. We're helping each other out, covering the expenses as we go. So it all works out well. And everyone benefits. So we're all sewing in. So it's a good thing. So that's coming up this weekend, and that's really what all this is, this drive is about, is to get out here for this and to be part of this. And it's going to be a great event. I think that is evident that with the amount of fear porn that they're pouring into this, that they are afraid of people. They are really afraid of people seeing, being part of something that I think is deeply spiritual. And so I just want to kind of get into some thoughts today. This is not going to be a political show tonight. We do that enough. I just want to kind of share some thoughts from the road, as the title says, and just kind of walk over just some reflections today. You know, we keep hearing from these people that the world is overpopulated. And we also are focused on a narrative which is very hyper-focused into the city spaces. It's interesting to note that when the West was settled, one of the big things people were doing is they were trying to get away from the big cities. They were trying to get out and get a new start, and they were trying to leave their past behind. And what ended up, what the West has been, and I grew up in the West, and I could tell you that much of this is, that mentality still is there, is there's very little judgment on your past. There has always been, at least as I grew up, a judgment on how you worked and the type of work that you did. Who you were as a person was reflected in the work and the heart that you were. That came about from the history of settling the West, because so many people came from different parts of the country. In my county, for example, Douglas County in Southern Oregon, we had the first veterans hospital there, which was set up for the veterans of the American Indian Wars. Many of those fighters that fought in those wars were Confederates, and they came out, and that hospital was set up so that they could have a retirement and have benefits. Nowhere else could they receive that, and they weren't even respected as war fighters. There was a lot of coming together on the West Coast because we had to. It was a difficult environment. Even when you drive it now, the distance between things is immense. There's still huge open landscapes. When the route that I took has taken me through Boise down to Salt Lake City and then across Wyoming, and you have to plan differently when you drive out here. When you're up in the Northeast or you're down in Southern California or you're around cities, if something happens, it's no big deal. You call a tow truck. When you're out here, you break down. It's a real issue. You have to have water with you. You have to have food with you. You have to have equipment to if you're going to change a tire, it may just be you changing a tire. Those sounds like little things, but they are big things out here. And the way you plan and plan for trips is very different. When I came across the pass coming out of Pendleton, Oregon, down through La Grande, we had snow last night, and there were chain warnings up. Now, I have chain warnings or snow tires. I've got big mudders on my Jeep, so I'm not worried about that. But again, here we are in April, where you plan differently when you take these trips. And the distance between places, even your gas, you think differently. You have to plan it out. Where you're going to get fueled up, and how far your intervals are. Because if you miss some of these spots, there's nothing for 30, 40, 50 miles. That's the same, like if you've ever come along the edge of the desert down in California, you're going to find that there's distances of like 80, 90 miles with no services. Cell phone coverage is better now than it's been in a long time, but I carry a sat phone because you never know when you're going to be at a place where you're going to have no signals and a few bars. And if you do need to call for help, it's going to take a while to get here. The distances between places are quite a while. I've seen two major accidents on the way, big trucks. One was last night. A truck was totally flipped around, driven off the edge. His cargo, his load was spread out. He had gone through the divider or the railing system and gone off the edge of the hill, almost a cliff. Today we saw one. I saw one that was horrible. The entire cab was cut in half. And again, you go through these things, I find myself praying for these folks and really just thinking about how difficult this road is out here. It's long, it's tiring, and a lot of these drivers out here that are hauling these long loads are not only being taxed with long hours, but remember, many of them have been vaxxed, which is a real tragedy overall. But in the bigger part of this is cattle country. This is farming country that we're going through. This is, all of this is part of the I would call it the meat and bread basket of America. And this is where the war is being targeted at, but it's being discussed in the cities. People in the cities are out of touch out here. They have no idea really what this world is like. They live in their little boxes. They live in their suburban homes or their custom homes. And everything that they get comes from places like this out here. These towns, there's, you just run along and it's just fences and fences, and it's cattle and it's hay and it's farmland and it's big equipment. And the space between, like, again, these distances are huge. So when you drive along and you see a cattle area where there's, you're 20 miles in between someplace and they've got a team up there building out fences or feeding the cattle or setting up a temporary corral, this is where the true cowboys live. This is where the true ranches of America, and this is just along the freeway. It gets even bigger and more involved when you head north or south of the freeways and get into the real rural country. I say all this because there's no confusion about gender out here. There is no confusion about faith out here. And there's no confusion about what hard work is out here. This is a country where you have to, you know who you are. You grow up doing the things that are, that people do. Men do men things, women do women things, and that includes women working with cattle as much as men, but the, or whatever industries. But this is a hard-working part of America that they want you to believe can't exist, shouldn't exist, that they're going to replace it. And this is part of what they're trying to do with this bringing in of new labor, which is to break the back of that and turn this into something that is truly obedient and slave labor driven. But these are proud people, hard-working people. These are people that don't make a lot of money on the average. They make a living, but if you're going to compare that to what somebody in Wall Street makes or somebody in the tech industry makes, they make pittance by comparison to that. But it isn't about the money. This is about the value of the work. This is about the spirit of America. This is what America was built on. And every time I drive through here, I reflect on these things because this is the heart of America. This is a big part of what we are. The problem is when we get into the cities and we start putting people in high-density spaces and people start to be detached from the land and people start to step away from what is real in life, we start to see the problems of humanity. Humanity was not intended to be idle. Humanity wasn't intended to be behind a computer screen. Humanity wasn't designed to sit in a chair all day or to take a welfare check or expect the government to give them something for free. That becomes a normal cycle in cities. It becomes a place where space and land is something like, for some people it's a balcony, for some people it's a tiny little backyard, and it's not understood that the expanse of land is out here. But then you get the green freaks up here in the cities, and they look at this and they go, well, cattle are destroying the land. We need to have this land back to nature and back to normal. They have no comprehension of how much stewardship has gone on to build this land up the way it is. They don't see the benefit of cattle that are just simply grazing on open range. And as they do that, they're doing the normal thing of turning the soil. They're fertilizing the soil through their manure and their urine. And over time, this is a regenerative process that happens. But they don't see that. Instead, they see only the negatives because they've never worked it. They've never been in it. Their world is defined by what is convenient, what to walk to, what's within a localized distance. And that's been the big draw to many of these cities. The cities are in these high-density living environments, which is what Portland, by the way, was designed after. So to kind of give you a model of Portland, which is kind of the future of what cities are supposed to be, Portland has a light rail system that runs north and south and east and west, and it's fairly involved now. They've built a special bridge just for one of the rail trains that can only handle people, bikes, and the train. Portland is wanting tried to build itself to be a walking city, a commuter city, a zero-carbon city. And everybody's been encouraged to live in smaller and smaller places along the railroad lines, along the light rail lines. They actually, was part of their planning to get more federal money, they had to have a urban plan to buy up these lands and then turn them over to developers where they would in turn turn them into high-density spaces. And it's called multi-use environments, where at the bottom there's always retail, and then you have professional offices above that, and then you have living spaces above that. And they sold it as a very attractive thing. You would be able to, it's the pre-sale to the 15-minute city. You'll be able to live in your condo, your apartment. You'll be able to walk downstairs, get your coffee at the coffee shop. You'll be able to walk over and get your food at some natural food store. You can go to your yoga place or your gym, whatever it is. Maybe you can do martial arts if that's not too dangerous or stressful for you. You can have an internet cafe somewhere. There'll be free Wi-Fi everywhere. And that can be the extent of your walking time. And then you can go out to green spaces and walk the bike trails and come home. And everybody will be on bikes. And if you need to use a car, then you lease a smart car for a few hours. And you rent it around town. And then you come back. And there you go. Portland was executing that model back in 2010, 12, 13. And it's become increasingly diminished because of, obviously, the crime in Portland. But that's the end result of all of these cities. These aren't accidental. They're a consequence of, by design, of how much these things fail. Out here, you don't have that problem. Out here, it's a real world. And so, you know, people will say many times, well, we don't have enough land for people. We have plenty of land for people. We have plenty of land for people. There's not an overpopulation problem. The only problem we have in terms of population is that there's too many people for these elites to manage safely. So they want to cull the people to reduce down the numbers so that they can have all of this expanse out here to themselves. They want to have these lands to where, for the time remaining, the world would be fed off of these few acres. And then over time, as they diminish that population, this turns into their playground, their parks, their hunting preserves. And that's how they want this world to be. It's a world that they're dreaming of for the elites, where they kick off the people, stick them into small cities, and strip them from the land. That all the people that work out here are no longer those that think, but only those that make a meager existence. They bring in migrant laborers, they do the work out here, and then they either keep them in temporary housing and move them around, or they just destroy them, send them home, whatever they have to do. It's a disposable world. By virtue of people is what they want, but what's here are the roots and soul of America. God is here everywhere out here. And I encourage everybody as we go along and as you go along your days to take time to really step into the world and to enjoy what God's creations are. I've seen two of the most beautiful sunsets in the last 2 days in a long time. One was coming out of Pendleton, and it's High Plains type sunsets that are gorgeous, that in the back it's an intense orange and on the front clouds it's brilliantly purple. And the viewpoints around coming out of Pendleton as you climb up into the mountains are spectacular. Coming across the flat here of Wyoming today was the same thing, another spectacular sunset with a brilliant sun in the back and the purple clouds in the front. The skies are limitless out here. And this is one of the things that my grandfather used to love about Montana. They call Montana the big sky country, because it was a place where he could see for miles and open lands. This is very much how Wyoming is. It's how eastern Montana or eastern Oregon is. And it's very much how Idaho is. And the one thing I would say that's encouraging as you're going along is you don't see any less production of beef or less production of agriculture. Matter of fact, everybody's busy right now. Hay piles are stacked high. You have large areas moving of manure composting, which is indication the cattle are producing high. You have cattle out here in the open range. You have a lot of activity going on. And these are places where literally life works, is the best way I can say it. It's not perfect, but it works. These are areas where trades are big. One of the big signs coming into Wyoming is the sign advertising for the welding school. Welding skills are massively needed for all the things being built. And of course, Wyoming has a mix of energy here. You have windmills. We have windmills in across Oregon in some places, and in the gorge. We have solar in the gorge. What you're seeing out here in Wyoming more than anything is the diverse mix of things. And you see that and really start to appreciate. I'm not a big fan of either one of those, but the windmills are solar, but nonetheless, it's a mix with natural gas and with petroleum products or perishables versus the renewables, or what we call the renewables. But it's an amazing country we have. And I think that's where the bottom line comes down, is that we realize how big and how expansive this country is. And I have to ask myself over and over, how is it that we constantly are focused on the most negative, the most disgusting, and the few that literally run this world? When you look at what goes on out here and you realize and you just count the number, how many congressmen, how many in the Senate, how many in the House of Representatives, how many in government alone? And asking yourself those questions, who's in the intelligence agencies? Who's in the military? We end up with a few million people by comparison to the 330 million that occupy this nation. And you have to ask yourself over and over that how did those few see so much power that they can tell the many out here what to do? Washington is a distant memory from out here, as are state capitals. And yet, the biggest problem I think we face as a nation is the willingness to comply to these fools. This is where life is, not out there in the city. And yet, they want you, whether you're a New Yorker, or whether you're in Chicago, or whether you're in Washington, D.C., they want you to believe in any of these metropolitan areas that their life is the best. They have the greatest way of civilization. They have the convenience of all these things. This is how they like to live. Take away the products that they rely on and they wither on the vine in a very short amount of time because their lives are completely dependent on a supply chain system that ultimately begins in these rural areas. These are the heartbeat, folks, of America. And this is where our country lives and thrives. And it's where the heart of men lives and thrives. Not behind computer desks. Not in weight rooms with doing excessive amount of exercise and steroids to look good. Guys out here are men of strength and men of hard work. They don't compete in bodybuilding competitions. They don't worry about whether their workout tights are going to be purple or yellow or red to make themselves look good. They're not going to even care whether it's about a Starbucks, a latte, or anything like that. Coffee's going to be black and maybe once in a while with a bit of sugar or cream. It might be burnt because it's coming from the truck stop. You're going to have a vehicle that's amazingly how many of these vehicles out here are kept clean, yet they're hardworking. You see equipment that's used, it doesn't look like it's off the showroom because it is used. And you see people that are strong in their nature and their character because they're living in the world. This truly is what I would refer to as the real currency of life. And it's something for us to remember. And I bring all this up because we spend a lot of time talking about the ills of the deep state. What we don't spend enough time on in America is looking at the power and strength of who we are. We're not defined by a military. We're defined by a people. We're not defined by politics. We're defined by a people. And even for that matter, we're not even defined by churches because there's so many of our pulpits are broken. We're defined by a people. And when you're out here, the wisdom that lives here and the faith that lives here is deep. And it's the sort of wisdom and faith that comes from years of being in the world with God. You don't have to ask somebody what their faith is. You just know it out here. Some are stronger than others, but at the end of the day, faith is part of these regions. It's who people are. It's how they live. It's how they survive. They have to, because you don't get a choice in many of these places of whether you have faith or not, because if you don't have faith, you literally will wither on a vine. You don't find many atheists out here because God is everywhere. God's in the sky. God's in the ground. God's in the wind. God's in the cattle. God's in everything you touch. And it's a powerful existence here. There is a pride in being American here. And that's evident everywhere. There's a pride in showing that you're American here. There's no hesitation to say that. The idea of living in jobs where you're in a suit and a tie or whether you're in some version of a button down and trying to shuffle around with a briefcase and polished shoes, that's foreign to these places out here. And this is truly what I would say is my heart and my people of America. That isn't to take away from those that are in those places, but the problem we have with cities is that cities get completely detached too quickly. Once you take people from the land, they begin to live in a different world. They're in a bubble of a sort. They start to live with expectations that aren't real. They're living in places and imagining things that, quite frankly, just don't have anything to do with reality anymore. And I go to Portland, and I mentioned this before, but I was in Portland for about 4 or 5 years, almost six, actually longer than that, because I was in Portland now for almost eight years. And I had, at one point, my office was downtown now where Antifa occupies the space. But from the condo I had down to that lower area, in a walk of about 2 miles, there was on the map, you could count along that route, 22 Starbucks. Now, what type of world is that? And Portland is a world where rather than make the coffee, you get the coffee on the way to work. And it's all part of a social environment. The cost of these things that adds to your cost of living is enormous. And it becomes a social event. It becomes part of what is normal in life, is that the coffee and the bakery with, you know, organically grown this or that, all of that becomes extra special, because in the city, you're distinguishing yourself in class from those that can't afford. When you live out here on a ranch, cattle are grown and raised. You don't ask whether it's grass-fed. They are. When you're out here and you're going to eat meat, you might eat something like, you might have antelope, you might have deer, you might have elk, and you might have cow. These aspects of life are real. You don't worry as much about whether your eggs come from an egg farm or whether they're organic. You're going to raise a lot of this food on your own. Those values still exist here. Not everywhere, but they still exist here. And the dependency on the major, on these major box stores is much less, because they're just not here. You do with less. You have less. There's a lot of things about this type of life here that people live more simply. And in the process, I think that what we end up with is getting back to a better part of America. Now, there's as many things I could probably rail on about the negativities of these places, but the fact of the matter is that there's no part of this country that's ever perfect. We could talk about just the way some of these towns are laid out, and we could talk about some of the junk that's left around. But then there's another understanding to that, because as you start to work on farms and you understand how important spare parts are and pieces are and how farmers reuse almost everything, you start to appreciate why there's many times many rigs hanging around, because they're going to get one part off of another to make something else work. They don't have the money to go out and buy something new all the time. They have to make the lives of things extend. So it's a value issue here, a value of how you're going to live. It's a value of living in a place that is hard work. It takes effort. Life isn't easy. Life is something but that you enjoy through the process of work. And in the process of work, I truly believe that you discover a great deal about the power and glory of God within all things. My heart is in these places. This is where I think America is. And I think that when we look at this nation and we look at where the major problems are, I think we come up with the same conclusion every time. It's the big cities. Big city models in our nation have failed. They have proven that the only thing it creates is an elitist class. Our state's voting systems are built on a democracy, not a republic. And so the big cities are able to outvote smaller rural areas, and in so doing, carrying that weight, they're able to dictate policies that benefit them and destroy the small part of the part of America that lives in the small towns and the rural areas. The disconnect is phenomenal. And that disconnect is something that's so significant that the bigger the city is, the more people get accustomed to living in those environments, they quickly lose the skills to return to the land. There are things that go on out here that are generationally passed on, and there's people that want to stay here. And quite frankly, while there's a resurgence of some of that happening in America, it's going to take a long time to rebuild the country that we had, or that I should say that we want. Our past in this country, in this nation, is pretty much done. The question is, where are we going to go? And I think that's the question we all have to ask the hard question with. Where are we going, and what do we want? If what we are after is those high-density living environments where you have the ease of convenience of shopping, walking around and socializing, and living in a place where the coffee shop and the natural food place and all of these events are your solution to life, and life is then revolved around the computer and the cell phone and smartphone, that life already exists, and the evidence of how successful that is can be pointed to in San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, Los Angeles, Chicago, Atlanta. I can go on a list. Crime rates are high. Depression of the society is high. Suicide rates are high. Gay and lesbian marriages are growing. The divorce rates, the highest divorce rates are occurring within gay and lesbian marriages. And suicides in the transgender community continue to peak at the highest of any of these alternate lifestyles. You have people groping for understanding and meaning. And there is just a collective
downgrading of humanity overall. That's the life in the city on an aggregate. And while people can point to those things that say, well, I live this way, or my life is that way, once people step away from the land and aren't living with the land anymore, we start to slide backwards very quickly. Men were intended to do real work. And I don't consider real work to be sitting in a desk or a cubicle doing some sort of programming for hours. Real work is creating. Real work is tending to animals. Real work is these sorts of things that get you into a place where literally you're killing something once in a while. And there is where we start to get to the real heartbeat of what makes a man. I've talked about this before, but it's never more evident than when you're out here in these rural areas. If you're a man and you haven't killed something, an animal, or on a hunt, you're missing out on a big part of who you are. The hunt is a big piece. When you're living on a ranch, the connection between life and death is very real. You have to kill an animal to harvest it. At times you put an animal down because it's in pain. But life and death are in your hands to manage and steward. It changes you. We have way too many pastors now that have never had any experience in that sort of lifestyle. They don't know what it is like to hunt. They don't know what it's like to truly farm. They don't know what it's like to butcher and slaughter. They don't know what it's like to have the animal's blood pour over your hands. Those are very real issues, and they transform who we are as men to something much more rooted in the earth and much more rooted as God intended us to be. And when we do that, men awaken. They become more of what they're intended to be in the world. And I don't believe it's a hard step once you get there to be able to see and understand the glory of God. Because you're not doing this out of vengeance. You're doing this out of the glory and the honoring and the humbleness of knowing that when you take an animal's life, it's precious. You waste nothing. When you pull men away from that, it's interesting how quickly a couple of things happen. When you pull men away from the earth, away from that hunt, away from that touching of life and death, very quickly you get into the softening of the male. They become more effeminate. They become more interested in acting big. Gym work gets in there. Testosterone has to kick in. All these sorts of things to try to prove who they are, when in fact there's an overcompensation for something that just is taken for granted on a daily life out here. I cannot stress enough for men that it is essential that you get involved in real tasks, knowing how to grow food, knowing how to raise animals, knowing how to hunt. Those principal things are part of who we are as men. And when you're left without those, I will guarantee you that where you're going to end up is in addictions to pornography, addictions to other sorts of habits that are degrading, and you're going to end up with a life that just isn't as fulfilling. Whether it's construction or electrical trades or plumbing, whatever those skills are, men need to have their hands involved in things. That's what we're intended to do. And if you haven't done it and you don't, and you're living in a world where you're outside of that, seek it and find it. Now, I can't state this for fact, but I will state this with a general observation. When the time that you're working out here, and these guys are working sunrise to sunset. In fact, I will tell you, I have a hard time keeping pace with the schedules that these guys keep. They are up before sunrise dealing with animals if they're ranching, and they're in after sunset, weighing the dark, making sure everything's tended to. There isn't time for those other things, like, example, pornography. There's time for getting back, taking care of, prepping for the next day. If they're married, having a bit of time for their families and getting on with things. Values change when we come away from the land. And if there's anything that we should take right now and look at very deeply, it's as a reflection of a nation. It's the question of, where are we? What have we become? And what was the cost of us getting here? In my feeling, the cost that we have had to pay to get to this life of digital convenience is too much. I don't think it's worth the cost. The cost has been the destruction of children. The cost has been rampant pornography. The cost has been increased in drug use, whether it's pharmaceutical addictions or whether it's illicit drugs. The cost has been increases in alcoholism. The cost has been depressions, suicides. The cost has been the destruction of meaning and purpose in life. And the cost has been the distancing of the pulpit. And in the process, as we watch, which the country ultimately should be one that is built off the pulpit, as Finney reminds us, anything really that goes wrong in this society morally or ethically is the fault of the pulpit. That those pulpits out here, they're here. But we also see as a collective whole, as a nation, the distancing from our faith. People aren't finding the connection anymore. They're not finding purpose anymore. That's not God. That's the life in which we live, and it's a message of weakness from the pulpit that's not bringing people in. How can you have a strong message when 60% of our pastors are addicted to porn? Our country has suffered a massive bankruptcy morally and ethically. What's refreshing when you're out here is you can still feel at least the presence of, the reality of, that it's still able to be reclaimed. But it hasn't left this place untouched. These places have all been touched by this new world we're in. And I wouldn't say that the overall benefit is good. The report card at best out here, even though there's great things, the report card of what we could be is about a C, maybe a C minus versus an A plus. There was a time when this type of world out here was normal, and it was growing, and it was excited, and there was more and more going on, people wanting to seek this lifestyle. But that's, and we're still at that decision point of where we're going to go as a nation. My vote is to go backwards more than go forwards. Jeremiah 6:16, seeking the ancient paths, and ask where the good way is. And the ask is the big piece. Because as a nation, we have to be asking the question to ourselves and to God, where do you want us to be? Where do you want us to go? How do you want us to live? I don't have any questions about how to live. I don't have any questions about the lifestyles that I think that we can put together and accomplish. I don't have any doubt of the American spirit to overcome impossible odds. But right now, there's such a heaviness across our nation that needs to be lifted and pulled away. It's easy to understand why so many people just want to give up, and a lot do. But that's where we come in then as a remnant. That's where our faith has to come in screaming loud like eagles on the clouds swooping down to hit a prey. We have to introduce people to the power and glory of Holy Spirit and the love of Jesus. Because it isn't about that being their only calling. It's about them lighting the fires of righteousness within them that gives purpose and meaning in life, that everything we touch becomes a reflection of God. And when we get to that place where everything we seek becomes an extension of Him, everything we do becomes a form of ministry. I don't care whether you're welding or whether you're baling hay. I don't care whether you are working at a truck stop or you're filling cars with gas. I ran into a guy in Cottage Grove, Oregon, before I left. He was the gas station manager, proud, hardworking, greeted every customer, filled every tank, made sure everybody was happy. The place was spotless. You don't see that much anymore. In fact, I had to use the bathrooms, and he raced in to get me the key and handed me the key to the restrooms. And I knew why when I got in there. They were spotless, immaculate. Everything that was there, he was taking personal account for. Everything. He wanted to make sure every customer was happy. That sort of work ethic comes from somebody who has an understanding of pride in who they are and a love in country and ultimately a love in God. And that's something that if we're striving to get back to something, that's where we go to. But how can you have that pride when AIs are starting to take care of everything? Or when you make an app that lasts for 3 months before it's updated and maybe a year before it's erased? How can you take pride when you're part of developing software that will last maybe 1 or 2 years before it's completely re-engineered, or for that matter, is totally removed and replaced with something else? It's the disposable society that takes away those things that make us full and whole. But out here, when you're out in the middle of middle America, in this case, Wyoming and Oregon and Idaho and these states, these western states, cattle are real. The cattle are a real issue. You raise them and then you harvest them and you raise more. But it's the process that everything is tangible. There's no imaginary out here. There's nothing but real. And that's that lifestyle of people that live here that are part of this, that understand that connection to the earth, that gives them that saltiness, that wisdom, that reality of who we are as people. That's our big challenge. Are we going to follow that path, which is the path laid out ahead, which is this promise of a great new world through more technologies, flying cars, and 10 new cities? That's on Trump's website, by the way. Or are we going to follow something more simple? To go backwards in a way. To get to a place where we start to put our feet on the ground and in our hands in the soil. We start to fabricate things with our hands. We're building with wood. We're building with steel. We're building out of iron with the blacksmith shop. We're repairing vehicles. We're simplifying. We're getting rid of the electronics. We're getting back to the basics of things that we can maintain. We can't maintain our vehicles easily. We can't maintain anything in our life easily. If something goes wrong with your cell phone, you have to take it to the shop or buy a new one. And most people buy a new one. Something goes wrong with your laptop, you got to take it to the shop or buy a new one. Everything is about disposable and, quote, recycling. But where do we have that value of keeping and maintaining? We just don't have it much anymore. Out here, it still exists. And that's what made America great, was our ability to create things that lasted lifetimes and generations. Our ability to make things that we could repair and fix. Our ability to make things with such quality that we knew that it would last so long and be able to use so hard, harder than, and be able to be a better product than anybody else in the world. Our aesthetics were always minimalist, not extravagant. And yet it was that functional aesthetics of American design and American principle of building that made us the greatness of who we were in the world. And that's who we need to return to being, in my opinion. Because that's the heart of what makes us great. It's not robotics. It's not AI. It's not electric cars. None of that we can even worry about, think about maintaining. It's getting back to the principles of hard work and manual labor. Simpler living in ways. Harder living for sure. More valued and purpose living, absolutely. And a life that revolves and centers around God. That's the heart of America. And to me, when we talk about going back, I would simply put it this way. Our journey forward is going to be based on our ability to ask for the ancient paths, as God encourages us to in Jeremiah 6:16. There are some thoughts for the day. Let's pray. Father God, I just want to thank you for this blessed time that we have in a nation to have a pause. We don't have violence across our borders yet. We don't have cities burning in inferno, at least not yet. We aren't being bombarded, aerial bombed, occupied like in Gaza, at least not yet. And that most of the challenges that we face as a nation are those that we can choose to be part of or not. Our children aren't being forced to be turned into transgenders. Those are choices. We weren't forced to be taking a shot. Again, choices. And even though the pressures are high to conform to a dark and evil path, what biblically we might call the wide gate, the path of destruction, we still have the choice to choose the narrow path and to seek you. Father, my prayer tonight is simple, to just awaken people to their heart's desires of the passions which you've placed within them, the purposes, the gifts and talents to awaken, and to use this time to seek those out and to start making them part of our lives, to get our hands back into the earth, to get men back with building things, to take a responsibility of the food that we put on our table, to hunt it, to butcher it, to raise it, and to kill it. We have to start getting back to understanding what we're part of and truly who we are. So Father, I just pray this blessing upon all tonight, the awakening of the true sense of self, the awakening of purpose, the awakening of function, the awakening of connectedness to the land, and to have a moment where everything that we are is around us that is not like that, we begin to question and seek alternate ways of doing things. To get back to the root, to get back to the ancient paths, to ask where the good way is. So guide us, Father, in this time. We're blessed with the love of Jesus that is upon us. We're humbled by all that was done for us, from the cross to this moment in time. Guide us and bless us in Christ Jesus' name. Amen. Well, Patriots, it's an amazing country we have. We often forget with all the insanity that goes on in our news. But may we always remember who we are, and that's the biggest part of all of this. We are an amazing nation. We have amazing people. We've lost our way. We'll find our way back, but it's going to take some hard work, and that's the one thing that we know that can happen. When we put our shoulder to it, we can overcome anything, and I believe we will. But we have to be reminded once in a while. And reminding is getting dirty. Reminding is getting the grease on your hands. Reminding is taking time to really get your elbows in it and remember what it is that we've always been. Hardworking, innovative, and adaptive as a nation. Patriots, I'm not going to run music after the show tonight. We're going to close out, and then I'm going to be on my way because I've got still about 3 hours to go. So keep your head up and your eyes forward. Never bow to evil. Never relent. Always press into the fight. God is with us. He'll never forsake us. And in the end, God always wins. But we are here in this time, in this place, for just such a time as this. We're at war. So walk boldly and fearlessly with Christ. Occupy the land. Expand the kingdom. Subdue the enemy. Mission forward. Patriots, I will see you tomorrow morning for Bended Knee. Until then or until the next time, God bless. Good night. Thank you. And out for now.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
Every thoughtful citizen who despairs of war and wishes to bring peace should begin by looking inward, by examining his own attitude towards the possibilities of peace. Too many of us think it is impossible. Too many think it is unreal. But that is a dangerous, defeatist belief. It leads to the conclusion that war is inevitable, that mankind is doomed, that we are gripped by forces we cannot control. We need not accept that view. Our problems are man-made, therefore they can be solved by man, and man can be as big as he wants. No problem of human destiny is beyond human beings. Man's reason and spirit have often solved the seemingly unsolvable, and we believe they can do it again. Surely the opening vistas of space promise high costs and hardships, as well as high reward. So it is not surprising that some would have us stay where we are a little longer, to rest, to wait. But this city of Houston, this state of Texas, this country of the United States was not built by those who waited and rested and wished to look behind them. This country was conquered by those who move forward. And so will space. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept.
The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Thousands of years to show its face. It has only one intent, to destroy God's light and to enslave. It has no scruples. It has no rules but one, to win at any cost. But we will never bow, for we are the remnant that will hold the line. This is war. We fight. We push. We climb. We never give in. We become the nightmare that evil didn't know could exist. We pray. We stand. We live by the words, "In God we trust." We fear nothing. We are the light that can never be extinguished. We are patriots. We are the digital army that will help deliver God's wrath.